Welcome to the official SBGAN podcast, hosted by Dr. Alex Noisley.
Folks, I always say that one of the strengths of SBGAN, one of the things that makes it as such a pleasure to work with, is its multiculturality, multinationality. Now, I know that multiculti has gotten a bad name recently, but I still kind of like the idea of profiting from, learning from people who come from parts of the world different from mine. And today we have somebody who in his very nature encompasses what it is to come from at least two different countries. Stefan Hartleif. Stefan Hartleif was born and brought up in the very far north of Germany, in Bremen. I've visited Bremen, I've visited Lübeck, I think they're wonderful towns, and it was, of course, in Bremen that I was first introduced to the ne plus ultra of German cuisine, Lapskaus. Now, if you haven't had Lapskaus, you're in for a treat. It's hash with beef and potatoes and onions and herring, all fried up and served with an egg. And once you get over the impression that you're eating cat food, it's really quite good. Stefan was brought up there. Stefan was brought up in the old Hansestadt of Bremen. But shortly after he reached his third decade, in his early 20s, that is to say, he turned his back on the sea and he went as far away from salt water as you really can go if you're staying inside Germany. And I've hauled the map out and I've looked. This is about it. He went to Tübingen, in Schwabenland, among the Swabians. I can't think of anything that's particularly distinctive about Swabian gastronomic culture. Spätzle? Noodles? Nah, that's just not good enough. So we're going to learn from him today why he went to Tübingen, what it's like living among the Swabs, the Schwaben, for somebody from North Germany. And if we get around to it, we'll talk about his work as a pediatric hepatologist, where he is interested in the biology of transplantation and of the transplanted liver. He wants us to take up a couple of questions. What is the prevalence of graft fibrosis in protocol biopsies in patients transplanted in childhood? How does fibrosis affect graft and patient survival? You may think that's two questions, but we're going to call it one. Then we have, should immunosuppressive therapy protocols be altered in liver-transplanted children? And number three, are there alternative immunomodulatory concepts for children receiving a transplanted liver? Stefan, welcome to the podcast. And do you ever get homesick for Lapskaus?
Thank you for the very kind invitation, Alex. It's great to be with you all. Yes, it's a really nearly a different country to live in southern Germany, and Lapskaus is a special meal. I had to get used to it, but it's different. And I am happy to have a wife also from southern Germany, so I'm now happy in southern Germany and love to live and work in Tübingen.
Well, I actually went and did a Google search for Lapskaus in Tübingen, and I don't think there's a restaurant that serves it. Yeah. So you've adapted yourself to southern German cooking, and you've adapted yourself to a lot of other things in southern Germany that are different from those in North Germany. But the biology of the liver is probably the same in both parts of the country. Would you say that?
Yes, it is. But actually, Tübingen is a very dedicated city, university hospital. We do a lot of basic science work and also clinical work with liver transplantation. And together with my colleague Eckhard Sturm, we organized the pediatric liver transplant program. And I think it's a very, very, very interesting topic for me. And it's still a lot to learn.
Well, let's talk then about the liver after it's been transplanted. That is, the liver down the line. What's the point of taking protocol biopsies? How often should they be taken? And what do you look for in examining the biopsy specimen?
Yeah, good point. I think overall, liver transplantation in children is really a success in the last decades. We see that children have a nearly normal life with very good prognosis. We see that we have a survival of overall. If the latest data did show that if the kids survive the first year, there's a half time of the transplanted liver of up to 40 years.
Whoa.
Yeah, so that's really a success. However, what we saw is, or different other colleagues also saw, that we have, despite normal liver lab values, we have ongoing graft fibrosis, graft even cirrhosis with normal lab values, and we have asymptomatic graft hepatitis, which means normal lab values, but ongoing inflammation of the graft. And so the question is, how can these changes we see in the protocol biopsies after 5, after 10, after 15 years, we see a progress on fibrosis. How can these changes impact the long-term outcome of the children?
Let's start with your first biopsy. You say at 5 years, if there's no perturbations in the clinical biochemistry test results, in the biomarkers of hepatobiliary injury, then you'd bring the child back in 5 years after the transplant?
Yes. Actually, I'm very happy to work together internationally within the graft injury group. That's a special interest group of Aspergen. And most centers of our group do 5, 10, and 15-year biopsies. Because the idea of a protocol biopsy is not to, it's not an indication biopsy early after transplant if you have elevated transaminases. It's more like in the stable patient way, when you think everything is on the right way, you like to double check and see, is the graft histology, is the graft integrity also normal? And that's why we do the protocol biopsies. I have to say, some centers also do a 1 year protocol biopsy. I think that's open for debate whether it makes sense to have also earlier biopsy to manage the immunosuppression maybe earlier and to change treatment.
Look, I'm going to put on my pathologist hat here. It's never far from where I am and where I work. As a histopathologist, 5 years out, I expect to see architectural abnormalities in a pediatric liver or a liver in a child because that liver will have grown. That liver will have grown, and there will have been, at the time of harvesting, at the time of implantation, or thereafter, there will have been problems with blood flow, possibly only in the microcirculation, but problems nonetheless. And interruptions to blood flow lead to shunting within the tissue and to growth of different parts of the liver at different rates. This abnormality of blood flow, coupled with the need for the liver to grow as the child grows, gives us nodular regenerative hyperplasia. And nodular regenerative hyperplasia has some of the same effects and some of the same manifestations as post-inflammatory fibrosis. Now, when you're saying that there's fibrosis at age 5 years after transplant, 5 years out, how carefully are you attempting to distinguish between post-inflammatory fibrosis and malperfusional, abnormal perfusion type fibrosis?
Actually, you're right. Fibrosis is like the end stage of different injuries to the liver. It can be problems of the microcirculation. Also, biliary complications can play a role. And so in our study we did within the graft injury group, where we did this retrospective analysis of protocol biopsies from many centers, up to 400 patients we included into the study, we saw that the main point is not just fibrosis. Fibrosis is just the symptom. It's more the question, is fibrosis related to inflammation, which is a different point, or that it's just fibrosis without any infiltrates. And so I think there's a different way of treating and a different way of reacting to fibrosis if it's correlating with graft hepatitis. This typical picture also colleagues described, for example, Stefan Hübscher from Birmingham with portal infiltrates, interface hepatitis. So this is, I would say, a different picture.
Right. Now, just to be sure, just to make sure for myself, you recommend to those who are following this podcast, you recommend a number of articles of potential interest. And this is long-term outcome of asymptomatic patients with graft fibrosis in protocol biopsies after pediatric liver transplantation has appeared in the 2023 November 1st issue of Transplantation. Remind me, did you have a team of histopathologists actually reviewing the sections, or were you working from reports only?
Actually, for that study, we worked on reports. So you're right; it's a difficulty for interpretation of the biopsies. We just rely on the scoring and on the reports.
So, because the phrase that comes to mind is "garbage in, garbage out." If somebody misread the biopsy first time around, you don't have a chance to correct that misreading.
Yes. However, I think that's why we did other studies to review biopsies together with one senior pathologist to really get a good impression what is the underlying cause of graft fibrosis. Is it the inflammatory picture, or is it like you just said, more the picture of microcirculation? Do you have nodules and something?
Of disordered perfusion, yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, I'm jealous now because you didn't ask me to be part of this panel that reviews these biopsies, and I'll try not to revenge myself on you during this conversation, but nonetheless, I am a bit peeved. When are the results of that actual slide review going to be available to people in the transplantation community?
Right. I think the difficulty is we have slide review, but then for smaller cohorts and for different questions. Because I think we did see in our retrospective study, fibrosis is a problem, inflammation is a problem. However, in these big cohorts, in these big retrospective studies, it's very difficult to assess how can you better manage the outcome, how can you change it. And what we did see in that study was that increasing immunosuppression using steroids, for example, did not really affect the outcome. The only factor was tacrolimus was beneficial as immunosuppressive treatment regime. However, starting steroids later or something else did not impact the outcome afterwards or impact graft fibrosis at a later protocol biopsy. So I think to better understand the mechanisms and also so to differentiate the histopathology picture, I think it's better to go to smaller but better defined cohorts. And that's what
so
we are doing.
That 400... 400, was it 400 patients or 400?
400 patients, actually.
400 patients, so possibly as many as, I'm doing with the math, I'm pulling out all the fingers I have to count on, that would be possibly as many as 1,200 biopsy specimens.
You're right. Not all patients had biopsies at all three time points. However, so we are happy if you like to do maybe 300. It would be great. But I think you can imagine it's a huge work, and I would say not possible to do in all of these 400 patients to read the biopsies again.
Well, my rates are reasonable, and as I'm practically in retirement, I'm not doing anything else today. So, well, but we'll move along from that. One of the articles that you ask us to take a look at is Safety and Tolerance of Donor-Derived let me pronounce that word again, mesenchymal stem cells in pediatric living donor liver transplantation. Now, I'm going to call this my step one because I don't want to pronounce it misstep. To suggest that it was a misstep, a false step, would be invidious. This appeared in Stem Cells International in 2017. And you told me in a little conversation that we had just a little while ago, before this actual recording started, that the MyStep 1 study has been terminated very recently. Are you ready to share with us some of the features of the study and of the findings?
Yes, I'm happy to do. Yes, you're right. It's a long time ago we wrote the protocol and published the protocol. It's a clinical study, and so we have a lot of regulatories in Germany to do a clinical study in children in the context of liver transplantation. So the study is on the use of mesenchymal stem cells from the same donor like the liver graft. In all cases, the parents donated the liver, or one mother or father donated the liver, and also the bone marrow derived mesenchymal stem cells. And we infused the cells during transplantation in the portal vein, and also 2 days later, intravenously, we administered a second infusion of the stem cells. And the idea is that mesenchymal stem cells are already known to have an immunomodulatory capacity. There are several studies from graft versus host disease, graft versus host liver disease, for example, and other inflammatory disease. And the idea is by infusing mesenchymal stem cells to modulate the immune system and to need less immunosuppression and to have a better outcome. And so this was the idea of this pilot study, and we were able to administer the cells. So there were several discussions where to administer the cells, and we were successful to administer the cells. And we could see in the follow-up that we did not see any rejection in these patients. And finally, they need less immunosuppression if you compare to our regular protocol. However, okay, the idea of the study was more to look for any safety concerns, and not the idea to look for really the effects, because I think it's a small study with 10 patients we included.
So the MyStep 1 study has involved 10 patients.
Right.
Now, my expectation is, as I hear you describe the study, that you have patients whom you know will require liver transplantation. Their original liver is on its way out. And I'm imagining that a good number of those would be biliary atresia after hepatic portoenterostomy.
Right.
You then approach the parents and say, we'd like to try something a little bit special with you, which is to say, if you're ready to be a living-related donor for your child, then we'd like to harvest some bone marrow and some other connective tissue cells from you, grow them up, and have them ready to infuse into your child at the time of transplantation and through a catheter that we will leave in place. Did you put them into the portal vein, by the way?
Yes, but not leave in place. We just put this was during the intervention, during the surgery, and just a small catheter for like 20 minutes inside the portal vein,
what about
and then
2 days
you can
after?
Take it
what
out.
About the 2 days afterward?
That was an intervenously application.
Oh,
like
that
systemic,
was in the peripheral. That was peripheral
right.
venous system. Okay, so,
right.
Yeah, all right, I withdraw the catheter, and the catheter has been withdrawn. Okay, so we have now. Now you've got a control group, I imagine, of living-related donor parents, also possibly of biliary atresia children, who say, that seems a bit dodgy to me. No, I don't want to take part. There's one set of controls. And then you have kids who, for whatever reason, go south very quickly and require an emergency liver transplantation, say, from a cadaveric donor, in whom you have, of course, no opportunity to procure stem cells in a well-planned run-up to transplantation. So I imagine you've got at least two comparison groups there, along with your historical controls. Am I off base?
Yeah, you're right. But this pilot study included was not randomized. So actually, it's a matched cohort, and we compare the outcome with these matched patients. But you cannot. It's not a randomized study where you can say, okay, you one group gets the cells and the other.
I'm not asking for that. But you had other patients who were treated during the same time frame.
Right.
Who also received living-related donor livers.
Right. And I would only compare patients with living-related liver transplantation.
Right, because of the genetic similarities between implanted liver and the rest of the kid. And then, have I lost my train of thought? Indeed, I have. And then you saw more rejection events in the children who did not receive mesenchymal stem cells.
Right.
Whoa, okay.
However, actually, I'm very careful about these results because that is not the aim of the study. Like I said, the aim of the study was to demonstrate safety and tolerability of mesenchymal stem cells in the context of pediatric liver transplantation. And the group of 10 patients is too small to really have a significant impact on the long-term outcome. And so I would be more careful.
Stefan, I know you're being very good. You're being very careful. But we all can hear the music playing behind the scenes here, I think. I hope I'm not too far off base there. All right. So should immunosuppressive therapy protocols be altered in liver transplanted children? Well, we've got two ways of looking at that. One is with your protocol biopsies, you've already found out that altering the immunosuppressive protocols doesn't make a difference. But then with the children who are actually about to receive a liver, then isn't infusion of mesenchymal stem cells from the donor in itself an altered immunosuppressive therapy protocol?
Yeah, that's one of the options I think we can discuss, whether cell-based therapy can also help and cell-based therapy can help us to use less immunosuppression. So that's one alternative. There are even other protocols around, maybe protocols with cells who can even be more effective. For example, colleagues also from King's tried studies on regulatory T cells, donor-derived or induced recipient-derived regulatory T cells, with the idea to modulate the graft and to have less immunosuppression. And what we did is we did a hematopoietic stem cell transplantation, so also a bone marrow from the same donor, but now not mesenchymal stem cells. We used really hematopoietic stem cells, and thereby we could stop. After hematopoietic stem cell transplantation, we could stop all immunosuppression in these kids. But you have to remember that hematopoietic stem cell transplantation is a really risky intervention, I would say. Well, so it's really limited for several indications like malignancy or any hematology disease. I would use this approach.
Okay, which is to say that the MyStep protocol does not include stem cell transplantation.
No,
does not include hematopoietic stem cell transplantation.
Right. That no, just if we talk about alternatives, that is also another approach you can think about. However, in most standard patients, I would say standard immunosuppression is a good way to go. However, I think it's very important to individualize immunosuppression in all our patients, because some patients need more immunosuppression or different drugs, and other kids need less. So I think it's very important to not just use a protocol for that fits for all. I think it's important to individualize immunosuppression regarding effect, but also regarding hepatic and also extrahepatic complications. Kidney injury, allergies in children is a big issue, and food allergies. So I think that's really important that we individualize our immunosuppressive regimen in the children.
I can't imagine that anybody would disagree with you. It's bespoke medicine. I think, although I'm not quite sure, that our producer is signaling to me to say, Alex, you've run out of time. I hope that's not the case, because we've got so much else to talk about, not least, what are your favorite Swabian recipes?
I like really cheese spätzles. That's lovely.
But cheese
spätzle.
It's not noodles with cheese. It's much better than that. Okay. Well, we have to investigate why Labskaus hasn't made its way south to Tübingen, and why Spätzle haven't made their way north to Bremen. But that's a bit outside the scope of today's discussions. Instead, I'd like to learn, since you now fly the Swabian flag, are you going to go with a North German or a South German song?
The song is North German. Maybe you know Udo Lindenberg, so he's a Hamburg guy, so it's a North German song. It's called Komet. It's by Apache and Udo Lindenberg, so it's a North German song for sure.
Udo Lindenberg. Well, I'm sure it's a great song, and if any of the people taking part as listeners in this podcast want to hear that song, it is available in a special Spotify playlist. Just look for ESPGHAN. Stefan, have we covered what you'd like to tell us? Have we touched on the points that you consider important?
Yes, thank you very much. I think I like also to use this to invite all interested people in liver transplantation in children to join us with the Aspergen Special Interest Group, the Graft Injury Group. So if you have ideas how we can improve management long-term of our children after liver transplantation, we are happy if you'd like to join.
Well, that gets back again to the theme of Aspergen as a bridge and a unifier that brings people together to work for the benefit of children. Thank you very much, Stefan Hartleif, and give my best to all my friends in Tübingen, please.
Thank you very much.